This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And I want to welcome everybody back for episode 8. And we're going to cover some things we've covered before and extend some of the arguments that we've already made. But we want to begin tonight by talking about the new topic, the January, February, and for many people, the March, April, May topic from the NFL in LD, and I've already forgotten it because I didn't write it down. What's the exact wording?
The wording is, resolved, economic sanctions ought not be used to achieve foreign policy objectives.
Did you guys vote for this topic?
I did vote for this topic.
Mike?
I don't think I did. It seems to me like I predicted that it would be one. I always predict that the January, February topic is going to have something to do with foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we debate it all the time.
This one does seem familiar. I mean, I did
vote
for this.
But we haven't. It's been since, I think, 2000.
99, I think, right?
It's been almost a decade.
One of our old debater, a friend of ours, Claire, had mentioned that she had debated, and she was like 90s, right? So I probably do have. But it does seem like I'm always touching on some of these issues.
Yeah, sure.
You know, with, I mean, certainly last, no, 2 years ago when I went into that winter thing that you have, and I talked there because I was talking about sovereignty, and I don't even remember what the topic. That was the ICC topic?
Yeah.
Was that 2 years ago or 1 year ago?
I'm already blanking.
Yeah, this is whatever. So we had the ICC topic. We've had, I forget what the other one was, but I mean, Mike's right. I mean, we regularly seem to have this. But I voted, I have to admit, I actually looked at my ballot because I carry it around, and I actually voted for it for January, February as my first choice.
Did I. So I did too. I think that it's kind of funny because today we had our big topic analysis meeting at Bronx Science, and I did a PowerPoint. It was really exciting. And I also used this opportunity to bring in some cases of mine from high school that may have been buried under a rock where they belonged.
Yes.
They did belong there. It was rather painful, but we had a good time listening to some pre-written cross-ex. Anyway, I think I may have voted for this topic out of like the memories of how good the 99 topic was, because I really think the wording of the 99 topic was just a lot better than this wording. And that's no real criticism of the wording committee, because I think this is a cool topic. But the fact that there isn't it's not specific to the U.S. I think is going to open this up to sort of debates that I at least find a little annoying and sidetrack us from the actual substance. And that became pretty clear when we were talking about it at the topic analysis. That having been said, I think that there are a lot of cool areas and things to talk about on the topic.
Well, it does have the backwards, the F is the neg.
Yeah, not crazy about that thing either.
I think that has run its course. I think that the half being neg existed to prevent certain kinds of cases from being run about 10 years ago or 5 years ago maybe, and those cases aren't really being run anymore, and I don't think we have to do that anymore. So I hope that the committee sort of stops doing this. Let's make the AF not be the neg. I mean, just have the AF.
Well,
the
reason they do it is because the neg wins so many more rounds.
Right.
That they try to put the side of the liberal debate community. They try to put that on the side of the affirmative in order to try to balance the gut intuition of the judges. And I think it's generally a bad idea to do that because it makes things nonsensical. But with this resolution, I mean, I'll say that I think there is – well, I shouldn't say I think. I know that there is movement to try to get the NFL to change it,
really?
The wording. To add, I think to add the word comprehensive before economic sanctions.
To remove like the smart sanctions.
So that the affirmative can at least have on their side some targeted sanctions. Because otherwise the problem is going to be, especially, and I know that it doesn't account for the vast majority of debaters, but especially at circuit tournaments, negatives are going to be able to just pick a specific sanction that's good out of out of any of the 195 countries against any other 195 country with any specific economic sanction, and you know the affirmative is not going to be able to answer it.
But this is this is something that I've been harking on, not here but in other places, which is that we've redefined Lincoln Douglas from what it's supposed to be. I mean, Lincoln Douglas is supposed to be finding a general principle for either side. And
but you know,
and we haven't done that in years. The NFL, I mean, they must be pulling out their hair. And when they had that redefinition of LD a couple of years ago, it was very much pointed in that direction. And nobody cares.
Well, I don't
Go ahead. Well, no, you go, Beats, and then I'll say what I was going to say.
Well, I just don't think that you can. I don't think that's something that can be top down. I mean, I think that might be. And I could be completely wrong, just because I don't participate much in the local league circuit here. But I think that's probably how it is at the league level, and certainly at the NFL level, that's how it is. I think you have to be more general rule and so on. But I think at your TOC qualifying tournaments with quote unquote good judges. You know, they want some weighing and some impacts and things like that. And I think that the default to a more example-based or specifics-based, I mean, that's just what comes out of, I mean, LDers caring. I don't know. Do they care more than they used to? They go to the library and they don't need to go to the library. They research and they have LexisNexis. And the ability to do topic-specific research is so much easier now than it ever was. And you're going to look silly if you stand up there and you want to talk general principles of justice and fairness against
general principles of justice and fairness, but it could be general principles of economic sanctions.
Right, let me just say this about the economic sanctions. If that is okay, well, there are a couple of things. I mean, first off, I agree with Beats in the sense that it's just not something that you can do top down. And I'm very sympathetic to the idea that there should be like general principle arguments in LD, but you know, I don't think putting a very broad resolution is the way to do that, because that's just not how the kids are going to debate it, right? And I actually differ with Beats from my experience at the MHL, and this is what I think happens at local circuits. You know, I think that the idea that there's this huge difference between local circuit and national circuit debate is bunk in a lot of areas of the country, because what I think has happened over the years is that areas that produce a lot of national circuit debaters and national circuit teams, you know, whatever that means, you know, teams that compete frequently at TOC bid tournaments. I think that has had a direct effect on how local debate happens that area anyway, right? Like, I think that if you walk into rounds at the MHL and listen to what kids are saying, they're not really arguing general principles either. I mean, they're coming at a couple of debaters from a few of the schools in the MHL. I mean, I guess they shall remain nameless, but kids who definitely do not compete at TOC circuit tournaments. I was hearing when the novices were blocking together arguments, and it didn't really sound all that much different in approach from what some of our TOC level debaters in the area are debating.
But so I don't know if that's a trickle, because I think when you see a topic, the first thing a layperson wants to know about are the examples, right? And a layperson is going to want to know about examples. It's the conventions of LD that turn it into, no, we're going to debate about the values and not the examples.
Well, so I don't know
that it's necessarily true that it's a circuit influence that is causing, you know.
Well, regardless of what's
for, yeah, for lay judges, you always have to have the example, right? You have
to completely agree.
Have the example.
I should backtrack with what I'm saying then. I mean, I do think that on some level it is. The way the arguments are being packaged is influenced by the national circuit, but regardless of what is influencing it, my only point is just to say that it was, as a response to Jim, was just to say that I don't think that general principle debate is even happening on a lot of local circuit tournaments either. That's the only point that I was trying to make.
I mean, even sticking to the idea, okay, obviously I agree that we need to have examples, but examples demonstrate a general principle. I mean, otherwise, it's just my example wins. Then it's policy. I mean, it's really not any different from it's not a unique debate activity.
Let me just say this: if you do want to debate general principles, in my opinion, this resolution would still be better served if it had the specific example of the United States, because then at least you could make
some. Then you're going to debate policy debate.
Yeah, Barry, I agree. It becomes much more of a policy issue.
I think that you'll debate
U.S. foreign policy is what it becomes.
I mean, then you'll debate policy debate. I think the reason why I think adding the word comprehensive to the resolution would be good is because it lets the affirmative not have to deal with those examples that, or any specific example that the negative is going to bring up, because they'll just get, even if the negative could bring up 10 examples, and there's no way that affirmative can handle that in the 1AR. Now that said, if we want to talk about the topic and general principles, I think that the affirmative has to talk about general principles, about the idea of harming innocent people that have nothing to do with their government. That the notion, and if we go back and talk about what economic sanctions, what their purpose are, from what I know, just having had researched it way back when, the reason why it's relevant from back then is because back then we debated a lot about Iraq, because we had the economic sanctions against Iraq, and so we were debating, a lot of the debate rounds were about Iraq, especially on the side against sanctions. And from there, the logic seemed to be that if you put economic sanctions on a country, it will deprive its citizens so much that eventually, one, the citizens will rise up and overthrow their government, or two, a political foe of the leader will garner enough power to overtake, either through military a coup or something like that, right?
Which
that there will be some overthrow of the government.
Which isn't because, true. It's not true.
Which, of course, the quote-unquote rally around the flag thing.
I'll give you two words. Cuba.
Right.
That's one word. Well, that was one word. That was a little awkward. but it's true.
John, that's what we call a joke. Okay.
I know, but it was. I still felt like calling it out. You don't need to. Be quiet, you. Anyway.
You haven't done what you're supposed to do on this podcast. You haven't once used the word rude, but...
It's coming. Don't worry.
But seriously.
I'm saving it up.
Cuba is... we talk about sanctions. I looked today. I saw what countries is the United States sanction. Obviously, we sanctioned Iran. But we're also sanctioned. We've been sanctioning Cuba now since, 1959 or 1961 or whatever. And so whatever is going on in Cuba is rather indicative of what's going to happen. And there hasn't been anybody rising up, nothing's happened. The economy has shrunk down when the Russian, the USSR collapsed. Then that really hurt them. But they're still plugging along, so.
Yeah, that goes, from an effectiveness standpoint, I think you're right, but that also has to do with the fact that most of the rest of the world does trade with Cuba, right? That one country can't really go it alone when it comes to economic sanctions.
The other
false premise that this idea that sanctions are going to cause the people to rise up is that may have worked in the 1700s or the 1800s when the differential between the gun that you have and the gun that the military has is basically the same gun. But now, the military power of totalitarian regime is going to be much more than any citizen army could overtake. And the ability for government to be in our lives 100% or close to it is a lot more. It's a lot more difficult, I would imagine, to start any sort of civilian uprising.
And in addition to an uprising of force, the government, of course, also has much more direct control over the media in a lot of places. So then you also have the problem of, rather than making the people rise up to revolt against the government, now the people are angry at the United States. Then we saw that in Iraq, right? And we've seen that in plenty of other countries where sanctions have been imposed.
What about South Africa? South Africa is you had universal sanctions for all practical
purposes. That's right.
The whole world sanctions them. I'm asking this seriously. Did the people of South Africa, when all was said and done, harbor bad feelings about the world or about the U.S., because the U.S. being obviously...
Well, I'm sure some of the white people in South Africa did.
Well, yeah, but they were the bad guys here, you know.
Right,
so.
They're also the extreme... They're also the minority. I mean, they're a total minority.
Extreme minority.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't mind that the people we're trying to overthrow were upset after we overthrew them, so to speak. But, I mean, was the general population... I absolutely don't know.
Let's just say one thing about South Africa that's interesting. In South Africa, the Nelson Mandela and the other leaders... African National Congress and stuff like that. Those people were calling for sanctions against their own country, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've only been doing my reading on the economic sanctions for however many hours the topic has been out, right? But I think that's fairly unique to, you know, to most economic sanctions.
There's
right?
this whole thing in Zimbabwe right, because that sounds just think, like that. That's going on now.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's because, and this is completely an uninformed. Opinion on this, but if just thinking about it, I think that's because that the blacks were so disenfranchised that economic sanctions against them, they had nothing to lose, right?
Right.
So
okay.
the economic
I think that's totally
sanctions
accurate.
Would harm the whites that were rich and would have a lot to lose. There, I don't believe there was much of a middle class. I mean, the middle
no,
class
there was
people
no middle class.
They were whites.
Right.
The blacks were all the lower class.
Yeah, blacks also had to like
so
live in specific areas and like purposely impoverished areas. So yeah, I agree.
So I think that in that instance, I bet if you talk to the very poor, you know, in Iraq, they would have said, "Yeah, I have sanctions because it doesn't hurt us. I mean, it's nothing. It doesn't hurt us any more than we're already being hurt."
This is not going to be the case in Iran, which is a fairly rich country, comparatively
right.
speaking.
Right, and there's a huge
and a lot of these countries
and it's
don't
an educated
have
educated middle class, and
right, and these countries also don't have a system in place, a structure that's put into place to completely withhold wealth from the vast majority of the population, or even a substantial part of the population, the way South Africa did. Right, like I mean, South Africa really was designed to remove that wealth from people, or to prevent that wealth from coming to people.
All right, well. But here's a question. Let's backtrack a little bit. I mean, the point of economic sanctions is what, right? I mean, the point is to affect the internal workings of a sovereign nation.
And yes, and I think that the other one thing that's interesting about economic sanctions is to see what the end result is supposed to be, because different things have been cited at different times. Sometimes it's to punish them for something, right? Other times it's to affect a change in the government that isn't necessarily. Is related to other things, right? Theoretically, one of the big reasons why we have economic sanctions on Cuba is to democratize Cuba, right? You know, because it was a part of a containment policy against communism.
Yeah, as soon as Castro steps down, we'll take
right.
over. That worked
So of course, what's silly about that is that economic sanctions are, if anything, preventing the kind of – you know, there are a lot of studies have shown that a free economy is what helps to democratize a country. So when you are preventing that development of a free economy, you are probably also preventing democratization in many cases, right? And if that's supposed to be one of the goals of the economic sanctions, to promote a government that is friendly to the country that is imposing the economic sanctions.
But I just want to repeat what you just said. I just want to underline that. The sanctions have two purposes, one of which is to effect change, and the other is to punish. I think that's an interesting thing that people might want to keep in mind, where there are both of those things.
I think that is important that people recognize that, because there are a lot of examples of economic sanctions over history. I think that people would be well suited to look into the history of Spain after Francisco Franco, during the dictatorship of Francisco Franco. Look how the United States and NATO and the UN treated Spain in the late 1940s and the 1950s, and then what happened after those economic barriers were removed from Spain. I think it's very interesting to look at that, and I think that that's an example both of punishment and trying to effect change, and then recognition that the economic sanctions were doing the opposite of affecting change. They're actually making the fascist dictatorship there more brutal. So that's, I think, an interesting historical example to look at.
Yeah, go
ahead, Michael.
I was going to ask what other countries... I mean, we have sanctions against North Korea.
Right. I think we have them against Myanmar, right?
I don't know.
Burma.
A lot of countries do.
A lot of countries do.
This is what Beats was saying before. I forget the woman's name. She very much calls for the sanctions. I mean, she encourages the sanctions.
Right.
Oh, she's the political prisoner.
Right.
Yeah, I just forgot. I'm embarrassed. I forgot her name as well. But
I know.
You know, here's a. And I don't. I'm not suggesting that this be the line of argumentation. But I mean, after World War One, right? I mean, arguments can be made that there were forms of sanctions on Germany that led to the rise of or contributed to the rise of Hitler, right? I mean, those were a form.
Well,
we
certainly punished Germany.
Right.
Blamed Germany.
I mean, and they had economic embargoes and sanctions put onto them that helped decimate their economy eventually.
I mean, well, I mean, the backlash argument is going to be, I think, a pretty persuasive affirmative argument.
Sure.
But I don't, you know, does the resolution ask whether or not they work or not? Is that even relevant?
Well, it's certainly relevant to any foreign policy that if it doesn't work, that it's not a good foreign policy.
But to the question of from a strategic standpoint, mm-hmm. if you're on the affirmative, do you even want it to be about whether or not it works, or do you want to keep it strictly in terms of is this the right thing to do regardless of outcome? Because it seems to me that if you start saying that part of our calculation is going to be whether or not it works, that's when you open up the world for the negative to bring up lots of examples where it works, and then they can just outweigh your sort of deontological argument as to why it is wrong.
I mean, you may be
right.
Let's
establish one thing, though. When have they worked besides South Africa? Like, I think that needs to be established.
I think targeted sanctions, I think they're used much more often than comprehensive sanctions. And I think targeted sanctions are used a lot just in small doses, right? Or at least the threat of them is huge too, right? Just the threat of sanctions.
I just think that that's the first place that people need to look. It is like, how often are these targeted sanctions really used? How often can we make that the cause of the change that we were looking for? Because a lot of times sanctions are used in conjunction with other things.
But I would point out, I mean, what I was going to say a second ago was that if you have a foreign policy does not exist to do right and wrong. Foreign policy exists
right.
to make changes or to do something. In real politics, it has to have some effect. So to ignore the effects of it seems to be counter to the whole point of having foreign policy. You know, so, I mean, that's what foreign policy is.
Well, that's going to be the fundamental debate. The debate is going to be between whatever sort of idealism, universalism, cosmopolitanism that the affirmative is going to uphold versus the realism of the negative that says, regardless of the fact that innocent people are killed, the only obligation that a government has is to, you know, maintain its own power, and so on.
John, what are you doing?
Sorry, I'm back. Sorry, I just got a phone started ringing, and I just shut it off very quickly. I'm back.
Oh, he's back. Okay.
Ignore that interruption over here. I was trying
I
to do that without anyone noticing.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm here.
I just looked on Wikipedia. These are the countries that the United States has embargoes against, trade embargoes, which I think is a...
There's two different levels. We have three and three, if I'm not mistaken. Go ahead.
Well, we've got China, no arms-related
mm-hmm.
exports. But we do give them most favored nation status when it comes to other
right.
trade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these... So China, if the wording doesn't change to comprehensive, you know, then the affirmative would have to defend giving trading arms with China, right? Let's see, Cote d'Ivoire, Cuba, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Iran, Myanmar, North Korea, Indonesia, palm oil.
Yeah,
Sudan,
so you have some very specific things going on there, too.
Sudan.
The three main ones are Cuba and Iran and Sudan, right? Those are the
North Korea.
Ones. No, North Korea is on the secondary level. Because we're back, as far as I can see, as far as Kim is concerned, it's just a game. This is how he's going to get more aid. He rattles his sword. We give him more money. We go through.
Yeah, well, then here's the other ones that they list are Sierra, Venezuela, Zimbabwe.
I mean, those are, but there's various levels there. So the big ones are Cuba and Iran and I guess Sudan. I was thinking Somalia. Anyhow, and then it goes down from there. They step them down until you get to China, which is just the one thing. And it's true. I mean, what you were saying before, comprehensive is a big difference than, okay, one particular thing we're not going to give to people. What do we do with Venezuela, by the way? I mean, not that Venezuela...
Defense.
Yeah, because they don't want anything anyhow from us, I would imagine. So.
Yeah, but we just are not allowed to trade defense goods with them.
Damn.
It makes a huge difference.
But we don't get their oil. I mean, it hurts us more than it hurts them. I mean, we get their oil in a roundabout way, I'm sure, but we don't get the direct oil. It's bad not to have a good connection with a major oil producer in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. At the Treasury Department, I guess, has the if you go to the Treasury Department actually lists.
That was what I was looking at today when I did one of your Google alert things, and I got some piece on that. It was from the Treasury Department.
Yeah. It looks like that we have them against, like, even like some of the we have sanctions against the Balkans and Belarus.
Where? Yeah, well, apparently, according to Wikipedia, we have an individual sanction on the president of Belarus. I really hope people aren't going to argue that.
There's plenty of nuts out there that were probably perfectly justified.
Is it the guy that was the gymnastics coach?
I don't think so. I just want to point out, as a little side note, we talked about this last week or the week before, Google Alerts put out, if you have a Gmail account, and who doesn't, get yourself a Google Alert, put the words economic sanctions in quotes once a day, you'll get everything you need delivered right to your doorstep. It works real nice.
Yes, it does. You have to remember to turn off your Google Alerts, because I'm still getting them for standardized exit exams.
Yeah, okay. A little bit goes a long way, but especially at the beginning of a topic, it's nice to see what's going on, and it's a good timing with all the stuff going on in Iran, except that whole, he wants to build the 10 nuclear plants, and it's such a nutty thing. I mean, that's part of the deal, economic sanctions. Last night we had our meeting, so I'm talking about economic sanctions, and from my personal perception, there's like a handful of things that you can do to another sovereign nation. One of them is nothing. And one of them is, go to war with them. And in the middle, you have economic sanctions. And, there's probably other things you can do that I'm not thinking of, but those are about it. Those are the only options. And I'm pretty much reluctant to take away any of those options, especially the one that actually does something without invading them. But
what is an economic sanction? I mean, because one of my debaters asked me, why do we have an obligation to trade with people? Like, just the choice not to deal with someone, is that really wrong?
I want to say one very quick thing about that. I think that in addition to reading the standard stuff on economic sanctions, debaters who are well prepared on this tournament or for this topic need to be reading about principles of free trade and whether whether free trade is a good goal or not. I mean, that's still a contentious issue, and I think it very much relates to economic sanctions, because a lot of the ideas behind why economic sanctions are bad, once you get away from the suffering of the people and you start talking about like their right to trade with people, that just assumes free trade is automatically a good thing, right? So I think Beetz is correct that's something that merits discussion.
I mean, I think it is an issue, but I mean, the real thing about the sanctions is not that one country imposes them, but that all country imposes them. So you're cutting off all trade. So you're forcing, you're cutting off sources of, valuable goods and resources that a country might need. Also, you're cutting off the ability for that country to go and sell its own stuff. And very few countries can survive that. I mean, that's going to hurt, and it's going to hurt the government, and that government is going to have to, this is the theory, and that government's going to have an awfully good reason to keep its people wanting to be the way they are and do what they're doing. And we're doing it usually against some country which is like some, jackass running the place that we want to get rid of, and we want them. But as you say, it's very hard to rise up in this day and age because you don't have the power. I mean, the power is so easily held by a small number of people that the whole rising up business is – who the hell has risen up? I can't think of anybody who's risen up in the last, millions of years. In my lifetime, who's risen up? I don't know. I can't think of anybody. Things just fizzle out. Russia fizzles out. The German two states of Germany fizzles out. I mean, everything just sort of fizzles out. And then next thing you know, they're not there anymore and everybody's happy.
Yeah. Or overthrown, I guess, in the case of Iraq.
I mean, the dictators, there have been some dictators that have been tossed out. Was it Kosciuszko, the guy in Chile, Pinochet?
Yeah.
But they have tended to be thrown out by outside forces, not by internal forces.
Right. Yeah, people like Franco, Castro, obviously these people stick around.
Castro is still smoking away. No, he quit smoking. He did quit smoking.
And it's his brother that's in charge.
Yeah, he didn't quit smoking.
That's true.
I mean, the brother didn't quit smoking. So.
But Castro has not been overthrown. I mean, the point is making it overthrown.
I mean, well, we tried to overthrow.
Well, it will be. I mean, I would predict that Cuba is going to be an example of fizzles out.
Yeah, I mean, eventually they'll run out of Castros. And, then they'll just say, oh, we can get new cars finally. And that'll be the end of it. And part of it being they don't have the support of Russia. I mean, once you lose a lifeline that counters the other lifeline, then it's just a matter of time. And there's plenty of countries in the Caribbean that, don't have a lot of manufacturing, don't have a lot of money, whatever. They just become one of them. They never were one of them, though. That was the thing. Now they're just used to being one of them. So they'll be, they'll open up the casino again. We'll all go back.
Hyman Roth.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah. They can open a Disney down there. Disneyland.
I'd go.
Cuba. whatever. All right, well, why don't we switch the subject a little bit? We'll probably talk about this some more. I don't think we've gone into any detail at all.
Well, the first tournaments on the topic are going to be Blake. I mean, the unique thing about the January-February topic is that I might just be naive. The two major tournaments that happen in December actually are going to use the January-February topic, that being Blake and College Prep.
Okay, so we'll have some idea what is being run. We'll be revisiting this a lot because it's going to change. And actual strategies that people might want to run, we should talk about those too. And what I wanted to bring up, and we talked about this before the show started, in the last couple of weeks, well, let's go back to the actual original source, which is Beetz's now notorious tweet, which said something to the effect that given that it costs $1,000 to send people to tournaments, he wasn't going to go unless every 5-2 or 4-2 broke. He was much more terse and to the point with it, but it was rather earth-shattering because it really did focus a lot of the thinking that we have. We run a lot of tournaments, or we're closely involved with people who run a lot of tournaments, and what we should be doing at the tournaments that we are running. And John, at the Bronx tournament, which is a 7-round tournament with, 160, 170 people, John?
Between 170 and 180, actually.
Okay, 170, 180 people. A 7-round tournament, which it had been historically, and also a runoff round, so that all the 5-2s got an opportunity to break.
The runoff was new. That was the new thing.
The new thing was the runoff this year, and that was part of this whole discussion. And then we just started talking about it amongst ourselves, the three of us, and I've been writing about it on my blog and whatever. And as a result of this discussion, Chris Palmer, who organizes a lot of the college tournaments here in the Northeast, he does Columbia and UPenn and Princeton and Yale, Princeton being this week.
He's Mr. Ivy League.
Yeah, he's very
Ivy League.
He went to Harvard. So he doesn't organize Harvard, though, and I won't say another word about that. Anyhow, he's running Princeton, and we started talking about this, and he said, well, look, you guys are saying that we should have, that the math ought to work, that if you go to a tournament, the math ought to work, that, you can't always necessarily create a tournament that has enough time in it to do what Mike wants to do, which is to break all the down twos, especially a high school tournament that's a Friday, Saturday, everybody goes home. It may be hard to do it. But if you have a 3-day tournament, then it becomes a real issue. So, all right, Princeton, we have the cap for the field was 160, and we're gonna have 160 in that tournament. So we originally had a 6-round tournament, which would keep 24 down twos from breaking. 24 down twos would not break.
Yeah, and it was
out of 37 or something.
Right, that represents the considerable majority.
Yeah, the considerable majority of the down twos would not break. And so we looked at the possibilities here, and the possibility going from what we had been saying was, well, let's have a runoff round. But the thing is, as I was saying to Chris, was, I mean, I think of a runoff round as a handful of people. I mean, the first runoff round I was familiar with was the TOCs, and it's always like three or four runoff rounds. And I know them well because if you're a judge, you like duck down under the seats because you don't want to have to judge those particular rounds, and you hope your kids aren't in them. But, yeah, so it's a handful. John, how many did we have at Big Bronx? Well, it's not a lot. It was like, it was more than four or five, though.
Right? It was more, you know what? I'm actually just forgot. I'm going to look that
could
up
you right single now. Flight it? That's the more important thing.
Oh, we yeah. could single
we
flight.
We certainly single
very
flight.
Very easily.
See,
I mean, we also had a ton of judges at our turn.
We were able to give nothing but the top-rated judges in the field, single-flighted. And so that was actually probably the more pertinent issue than, in fact, how many there had to be because it was single-flighted. So anyhow, looking at Princeton, there's absolutely no way. I mean, we could certainly have a runoff round. We could have six rounds and then have a runoff round. But we could not do it single-flighted because we simply don't have the depth of judges that I would want to put into that kind of round. So we would have to double flight it, which means we're going to add two and a half hours to the tournament for those 24 people. And then we started kicking this around some more and said, well, what about just if we had seven rounds instead of six rounds? And with having seven rounds, we are breaking all but a couple of the
very
teams.
Few. I mean, I think two. Only two. Yeah, two. Chris. I mean, I want to say two things about that. First off, I just double checked. We had 11 runoff rounds, and they were all single flighted.
And that to me is a small number. I mean,
that's totally, especially with single flighted. That's nothing. Now, two things I think need to be said about Chris. I am not in the Princeton Tab Room. I will be in Newark at its Eastside High School running a local tournament that weekend. But Chris. I have to say that, you know, this decision was not made flippantly or anything like that. And Jim, for that matter, put a lot of thought into this. I mean, Chris was really, again, you know, I'm not even in the tab room at Princeton. Chris was sending me all these IMs about going through all the numbers, really thinking this out. And I think, I'm pretty sure it's only two people won't clear. And that assumes that all 160 people will be there, and there are always drops at the last minute in a tournament. Mm-hmm. So it may end up being that it's just all the 5-2s. You know, clear. Mm-hmm. I'd be willing to bet that that's going to happen in the end. Whatever. My perspective is as a customer of the tournament, right? And somebody whose interest is having my kids debate there. First off, the Princeton tournament has done a really great job of responding to community need. For a while, for the sake of full disclosure, Bronx Science wasn't attending the Princeton tournament. And I think they've done a really good job of trying to respond to what people want at their tournament. In addition to hiring really good judges, I think that this was a really smart decision on the part of the tournament. My perspective is this. You know, if you're at a two-day tournament, like Jim said, you're pretty much constrained by a lot of things. And there comes a point where adding more and more and more can be a backbreaker for the kids and can just be impossible to run at the in the school and whatnot. But if you're already there for 3 days, it seems to me that it's more bang for your buck. Everybody's getting an extra round. That
seems
like a good thing.
Everybody gets the extra round.
Right. Everyone wants to debate. From my perspective, it's like if you're already there, I would want to debate another round. That's my perspective, at least. But the other thing is that I just think it's a no-brainer. I mean, if you're in a situation where the considerable majority of the 4-2s are not going to break, that's not a pleasant situation to be in. Whereas being in a situation where virtually all or all of the 5-2s break, I think is a considerably better situation. And, you know, I'm going to butt in now and say the thing that's the sort of the elephant in the room that everybody's talking about. Well, apparently, well, actually, maybe Jim should bring this up, about what the objection to this is.
Well, I mean, there's an objection is raised by debaters, and it's a classic a chestnut of an objection, which is to get a TOC bid, you have to debate twelve or thirteen rounds.
All right.
To get a TOC bid, but meaning that looking at the tournament as merely a way of getting a TOC bid, which is a very silly thing to do with a finals bid tournament. That brings up a couple of issues, and the first issue is one that I think that a lot of us are trying to get away from and have gotten away from successfully, which is the lack of support for tournaments if you're not potentially going to get a TOC bid.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just want to jump in and say a few things on this because I have really strong opinions about this. First off, At Bronx Science, we have a requirement that every person on the team has to debate it at least one tournament that doesn't have a bid. And actually, it's often that the kids want to debate it more than that because they enjoy it, because they just want to debate, right? And I think that that
well, you get practice and you have fun.
Right, exactly. And I think the other thing is that, so debate should not be about, I mean, my perspective on this is pretty simple. I'm all about, like, let's win the tournament, right? And, you know, we don't always win the tournament, and that's okay, right? And we're happy with how
I'm
we
glad
do.
Glad that's okay but the, with you, John.
Yes, I'm glad it is too. But, no, but I mean, that's seriously, it's like, you know, but there's a really serious point. Like, I mean, the goal going in is let's win the whole thing. Now, if we don't win the whole thing, that's okay. If we get a bid along the way, that's great. And, you know, even if we don't win the whole thing. But the goal is not let's qualify to the TOC and that's the end of our debate career. You know, it's not about, like, let's go to one tournament to go to another tournament.
You go to that tournament to go to that tournament.
Right. Definitely. And especially if that is your mentality, having that mentality about a finals bid tournament is just silly. Yeah. I mean, no matter how many – it could be 12 rounds. It could be 8. It could be whatever. There are only two people who are, you know, there are only two bids available at this tournament. That is that is not the way to go bid hunting, I guess, if that's what your goal is.
This is the worst kind of bid hunt imaginable.
Right, yeah.
Two out of 160 people. Oh, yeah, that's a good bid hunt, you know.
Right.
But, as I said, I think that the issue was raised or the objection was raised, not that seriously, but... it does raise an issue, and I do ask people who listen. I know we do have people listening, and
we do have people listening.
Have people listening, and otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. Well, maybe we would, but we have people listening, and I do encourage people to disagree with us. We try to disagree with each other as much as we can. Sometimes we'll actually pick a topic that we know we're going to disagree on just because that's what we do for a living. But feel free to disagree with us. We have the blog that this gets posted in, which is theviewfromtab.blogspot.com. You know, the three of us, we have victory briefs. We have my own blog. I mean, you know, we have our tweets, whatever. You have a thousand different ways to connect to us, to respond and say, you're so wrong.
There have been discussions about this on LDDebate.org. I mean, all these kinds of websites. You should be responding to what we're saying because we know you're listening.
Yeah, and specifically point out that you're responding to this because our ears will peer, they'll pick, you know, pick up and we'll listen. We absolutely intend to listen. I mean, one of the things that the three of us tend to have is a lot of unexpected power in the tournament universe that we inhabit. I mean, we run a lot of tournaments. The three of us run a lot of tournaments. And if people say, you know, you should be doing this, we're going to be thinking about that. And if you don't say anything, we're not going to. We're just going to talk to each other and do what we want to do. And we don't actually go to the tournaments. You know, we're sitting in the back room. You know, so you guys that are out there, especially out there either judging or debating and have strong disagreement with what we're saying, feel free to let us know what that is. And I assure you, we will listen. Absolutely, we will listen to what you are saying. No question about it.
Agreed.
Do we have... I want to pause for a second. While we were pausing, the music came on.
This is a real quick tech tip. This is a lame-o tech tip, but we've been talking for almost like 50 minutes or 40 something minutes, so I'm going to keep this one short. Skype, which is what we use to record or to talk with each other as we record this podcast, I think is also a really great tool for debate practice. We've used Skype for a couple of things at Bronx Science. I remember at the very beginning, I was sort of skeptical about the whole thing, especially using it for debate. But it is very easy to have practice rounds over Skype. As weird as it is, it's kind of weird to have that disconnect from where you're not actually in the room with each other. But there's really no lag time on this system, right? So we've found that we've done a couple of interesting things with Skype. First off, we've used it for practice rounds. Our policy team has done meetings on Skype, which is really helpful because our head policy coach, David Marks, has started a very exciting career at a law firm, very prestigious and whatnot. So it's a little difficult for him to always come in at the times he'd like to. So using Skype for meetings has been great.
This is all just talking, not seeing.
It's all talking, right? Although you can put film. I mean, you can do live video, and if you have a fast enough connection that
I know you can do video with a couple of people, so if you had a one-on-one debate. I know also, I mean, a lot of podcasts. I mean, if you buy a lot of equipment, you can do a lot more than the three of us are doing with Skype.
The other thing with Skype that I think is really cool is that we're setting up a Skype chat with one of our former debaters from the 80s who is now a professor at Yale, and he wants to help us out, but it's just, you know, not possible for him to come down to New York City at a time that would make sense for us. So he independently came up with that idea. He said, why don't we all just connect on Skype and we can have like a big meeting that way? And I just think that's a great way, especially if you have somebody who's a guest who could maybe come in, but it's a little difficult for that person to come to the school.
How many people can connect to one conference call? Or do you do it as a conference call, or do you do it as like him talking and you just broadcast it?
I might have to get back and post that on our blog, because like I said, the meeting size thing, our policy squad has done that, but I haven't participated in one of those yet.
Yeah, I'd be curious. There's some real possibilities here. I mean, I think all of us, we have day jobs. We're not, you know, necessarily. Well, John, you don't have a day job. You teach.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily with the students, or you have people that are far flung, or you want to connect to people. It's nice. It's free.
Right. That's the real key.
I've heard about it, obviously, for the longest time, but I only started using it here because I don't have anybody that, you know, in a long-distance situation to want to use it as a telephone thing. But to use it as all those other kinds of things, forget the telephone aspect of it, to use it for all those other things, why not?
This is much clearer than a telephone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Way clearer, especially in a world of cell phones where nothing is clear.
Yeah, but also remember, the three of us were all using high-level microphones and decent headphones, too. I think that you hear a lot of people that do Skypey things, and they have, like, you know, $10 headsets. It's not quite.
Well, that having been said, you know, I have both the LD practice runs that I've watched and policy round practice runs that I've watched happen live over Skype, you know, kids spreading, like, really, really top speed, and it's amazing how clear it is, even with not the greatest microphone. Okay. So Skype is a pretty impressive thing.
Good. Okay, well, that is our...
That's our short tech
tip. We'll all go and explore Skype some more, but I'm really happy that I have Skype. What are our predictions for the coming
I have a funny story about sanctions. Some of you know Leah Halverson, who is a PhD student. She's a former Apple Valley debater. The last debater I gave a 32.
And that was in what year? There's a good S cruise.
1997, maybe.
There you go. Okay.
You'll work out at our tournaments. We yell at the judges when they get 30s. We make them go talk to Joe Vaughn, and they just come out just whipped. Yeah.
Anyhow, so I was talking. She's a PhD student in some international studies, in Arabic or something like that as well. They wanted to bring some scholars from Iraq over to UCLA in order to participate in some lectures or some talks with their students, and they put in a request, and they get a letter back from the UC system saying, we can't approve this because we have sanctions against Iraq. And this was a year ago. And Leah was like, well, I don't think that's true. We don't have sanctions against Iraq, especially not in this area. And the UC system was like, yes, we have this memo that says that we can't do this. And the memo was from 1997. So those are some unintended consequences of sanctions, that the bureaucracy keeps thinking that we have sanctions even when we don't.
Interesting. So I predict that Lee Halverson's going to have a lot of headaches dealing with these kinds of things at UCLA.
I predict there's going to be a general uproar when we have 7 rounds at Princeton, and that they're going to storm the tab room, and there'll be nothing left of me and Vaughn but just empty shells of ourselves.
I predict that there will be a general cheer when the round 7 comes out, and that the vast majority of competitors there will be very thankful.
The only people that are going to cheer when round 7 comes out are me and Vaughn, because that means we can go out and eat. You know?
Here's my prediction. I predict on VBD, once the list of people who receive bids at the Alta tournament, which is happening this weekend. It happens this weekend. There will be a huge outcry as to why does Alta have bids? Why should Alta have bids? Nice. It has happened every year since 2003, ever since VBD has existed, that people are going to complain about the Alta tournament. But
what is Alta's bid?
It's a quarter's bid.
Quarter's bid. Where is it? I don't even know.
It's in Utah. And Utah, and they have, I mean, I won't get into it. It's a good outreach thing for the TOC committee to have bids there. And I am a big supporter, even though we cannot attend because of the strange thing about the tournament is that it's in Utah, so they absolutely do not debate on Sundays. They can't even pretend that it's something other than debate on Sundays. So what they do is they do rounds 1 and 2 on Thursday night, 2 and 3 on Friday night, and then finish the tournament on Saturday.
Wow. And they have seven rounds now, too, I think. I think it's one of the only other 7-rounders. Or they did at some point. So that is,
I don't know if they have 6 or 7, but they had to change it from being like a 5-round tournament because they wanted to maintain their quarters bid.
You know, one of the things that we should make this a future topic is why tournaments have bids and don't have. We've all been on. You guys are still on the committee. And we all can. We have stories to tell and rationales to give.
No.
We do, and
I'd love the topic.
Yeah, there's no terrible secret about what gets done. I mean, if anything, you know, I mean, there's some marginal, you know, confidentiality. But I mean, the general principles are interesting. We should spend some time on that.
Okay. Absolutely. Also, we should talk about at large rumor and not rumors. Actually, we should just do an entire thing of
expose.
Just an entire
raw underbelly of the TOC.
Just an entire thing about things that you believe to be true because your friends tell you that actually aren't.
Actually,
true
that is great. I think that's an amazing idea. Can we also put into that? This has nothing to do with the TOC, but why am I always asked at every tournament? Is this tournament pairing high low power match?
Yeah.
Why is that question asked at every tournament?
People, is this power pairing?
This in every round of the Glenn Brooks. It is unreal how often that question is asked.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's all random. I'm just picking them out of the hat.
I wish it were. It'd be so much easier. Yeah,
it would be easy. A 7-round tournament preset would be great.
I love it. All right. Well, we have topics for the future. Maybe we'll do that one. I like that one. Do that one next week. TOC, the raw underbelly.
Ooh, I bet that's going to be our highest rated show.
Our highest rated show. Okay.
Rated. What am I talking about?
Popcorn popping. That one.
We might hit double digit listeners.
Ouch. Come on.
I haven't looked to see how many listeners we have, to tell you the truth. But people are talking. I mean, people I know are listening.
I'm pretty sure we have a decent number of listeners. It was pretty remarkable, the Glenn Brooks, how many people made comments about how much they enjoy the show. And people from all over. So that was pretty cool.
People
from all walks of life.
Well, that's because you were sitting in the Tab Room, the view from Tab.
That's what it's all about. All right, that's gentlemen. Right. I will, John. I'll see you on Friday.
All right, we'll see you on Friday.
And Mike, I won't see you forever. But
yep.
Everybody have a good time, and we'll talk again next week.
Adios.
Sounds great.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. And remember, don't drink and drive. It's just not worth it.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.